So as we pull that agenda up, welcome to everyone. Thank you for making the time. Thank you, Travis, for being here as a guest board member per se. Janina, how are you?
Doing great, thank you. How's everyone else?
Well,
Great. All right.
okay, so as we traditionally start, I've asked Allison to recite our mission and our values. So we'll start our meeting off with the reciting of the mission and values. Allison, you're on mute, by the way.
Do I read, do I just say the five values or do I read them?
If you can read the mission statement and then recite the values in totality.
Okay.
Thank you.
So ECS's mission is to reimagine public education in low-income communities of color to prepare conscious, critical thinkers who are equipped to graduate from college and create a more equitable and sustainable world. We have five values, and our values are justice. We examine bias, racism, and prejudice. We deliver culturally responsive curricula. We succeed when students' race and class cease to predict their level of achievement. Community, we care, we collaborate, we respect the rights and voices of our stakeholders. Curiosity, we question, we explore, we innovate. Sustainability, we think globally and act locally. We adapt, we encourage systems thinking to create a sustainable future. Leadership, we listen. We think critically, we advocate, we shift public discourse, we are our own superheroes.
Thank you, Allison.
Sure.
Okay, so as the agenda states, I think we will record attendance and guests. So it looks like we are recording per Jeremiah. So hopefully, Jeremiah, you are recording attendance through that and the guests as well. So thank you again, everyone who have joined today on a Friday afternoon. With that, I will call the meeting to order. And I will ask for a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda. Zena, I
Sabu.
second.
Zena seconds. So Huey.
Here. Aye. Sorry.
Madhu.
In your room.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. The agenda has been approved. So with that, do we have any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items? Okay, do we have any presentations from the floor on agenda items? Okay, so with that, we will move into the study session and I'll turn it over to, I think first, Farnaz.
Thank you all again for being here. The intention of this session is to really collect your feedback and to have you vote on our path back to campus. For the sake of, we have Travis here who was not here before, but also for a reminder of what our plan has been, I'm going to really quickly rush through the plan and include some slides that other board members have asked me questions about in this process. So, we are here to collect your feedback and to create a space for voices. So, just if you can, please be conscious of that and please jump in and keep silences enough for other people to jump in as well. When we talked about the desire to come back on campus, we really were thinking about our students and our ability to meet their social emotional needs and understand how to better meet their needs during this time. And we want to connect our students to the resources they need in order to be safe and well. As you can see from this chart, we have gone into level four. We started out with testing, we did small groups, we did regular, we're currently doing regularly scheduled intervention groups. And our next step in this process is to open up for cohort campus visits. The mantra that Danielle shared with you all and we discussed last time we spoke was about creating a plan that's safe, caring, flexible, and sustainable, and that responds to stakeholder needs, student needs, and for the capacity of the organization. We shared data about our families' readiness to return to campus. And you can see from this survey data that about 30-some percent of our families are eager to return, and close to 50% are not ready to return. However, when we asked our parents whether or not they'd be willing to return for testing, the comfort with that goes up to close to 70-80% if you consider the not sure. So that led us to think that small in-person engagement with a lot of consideration of safety measures would make a larger part of our population feel safe. We also collected data from our staff, and while the staff felt comfortable one-on-one and in small groups, they were very anxious about the larger cohorts. And sorry about that. We collected feedback from our staff and also all of our leaders, and we are all very consistent in the fact that we are not here to remediate learning. There's a lot of talk, a lot of the funding streams are called learning loss mitigation funding. We're very confident about the amount of learning that's happened during this time and that our teachers have gone above and beyond to make this distance learning period productive for our students. And we've had 98% engagement rates, which we're extremely proud of. But when we're thinking about coming back on campus, it's not about remediating learning or learning loss, but it's about how to meet the social emotional needs of our students to create a space where they can enjoy coming together, meeting their peers, meeting their teachers, and feeling connected to campus, and gradually feel more comfortable returning to school. So this is what the plan will look like for the remainder of this year. As you can see, we've started the regular intervention groups, and now we're planning campus visits that will begin in March, and then we're going to refine them. I'm sorry, I need one second. So these are the safety measures that will be in place. This slide has been really helpful for our staff to understand what we're going to be doing and continue to do to keep people safe. And our timeline is that we have these intervention groups in place now in April. In May, we're going to launch campus visits and conduct remote testing, and we're going to launch working groups. And then we're going to continue to pilot shifts to that in June. So we've also created an opportunity for our staff who don't feel ready to come on campus in any way to seek accommodations and exceptions. And the good news is that once we've shared this plan with our staff, we had initially expected a large number of staff to be requesting accommodations and exceptions based on the survey data. But now that they see that we're focusing on social emotional wellness and that we're doing small visits and we're adapting to the community's needs, thus far only 5 people, even though we launched the opportunity to request exemptions on Monday, only 5 employees have requested exemptions. We're going to be asking for board members to serve on a subcommittee on like the 21st time period to meet for an hour and review those exceptions and help us, well, basically make decisions on our behalf about which additional accommodations to approve. The accommodations will be approved by human resources. It's the exceptions that we will be seeking your guidance on. One of the board members had asked, how much money are we losing by not starting now in April? So you guys may remember there was AB 86 that Dorothy spoke about that provides funding specifically for bringing students on campus for in-person instruction. And that's the amount of money highlighted in yellow. For every day that we don't bring students on campus open up for a grade level to come in person, we lose 1%, or as of this time, that's how it's projected. So if we're planning to bring a whole grade level or open up to a whole grade level on May 1st, then we're going to risk losing about 30% of those funds, or $133,000 out of all of this funding. When we thought about it at length, we thought it was worthwhile for us to forego some amount of funding in order to bring a larger part of our population, our parents, our students, our families, and our teachers along with us. And the long-term benefit of engaging our staff and really gaining their trust and not having to pay for Emergency Family Medical Leave Act funding would be greater than the funding that we would lose, that we would forego associated with in-person funding. Simultaneously, there's a possibility that these funding streams can shift in time, because if fewer schools are able to launch in time to access them, then the amount of money, the bucket of money becomes larger for the schools that access them. And simultaneously, there's an advocacy effort in way to say it's not really fair for you to deduct funding based on schools that are starting a little later, because the schools that are starting later are predominantly in low-income communities of color, and they need to address that equity issue. So we may lose $133, which we believe is $33,000, which we believe is worth it for all of the things we took into consideration, but we may not. So that's the big picture on that. The other question I got from two different board members is, what are other districts doing? So before I show you what other districts are doing, I think it's important to look at the rates. I'm going to give you a minute to soak in this data. Far left is LA County as a whole, and the communities we serve are in the other columns. And you can see how much more significant the rates have been in the communities that we're serving. So when we look at LAUSD, their plan right now is to bring students in on campus after April 26th for 2 days in person, middle and high, for hybrid instruction. But their model is really interesting. They're going to be bringing kids on campus and having them engage in distance learning, which is at odds with the way that we're doing it. We're bringing them on campus for connectivity and engagement, not to come on campus for distance learning. Some of you are based in Manhattan Beach, Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, and you're hearing, well, they're coming in 5 days a week, and why are we not meeting that level? Well, it's really important to recognize that we have completely different infection rates, and the communities there have been asking for schools, demanding for the schools to open, and 80-some percent plus have wanted to come back on campus, which is not the same as our community. On top of that, even though they're now planning to open up to middle and high school 5 days a week in a couple of weeks, the planned participation rates are declining by the day. So even though 80% of high school parents wanted to come back in person, now they're projecting only 45% are going to come back in person, because do they really want to like shift everything up last minute in this time of year? Oh, sorry. And then last is Sentinel Valley Union High School District. I forgot the H, sorry. And this is a high school district, and they are actually in a very similar boat to us. They are going to continue distance learning. I've linked the communication there that I'll share with you guys from them. They have not yet communicated a plan to bring anything more than some classroom visits in for students, other than for the high need students who are coming in person right now. So I wanted to go through all of that fast so that we would have time and space to try to respond to all of your questions and feedback. And I've stopped sharing for that reason. Hi, Kennedy and Denise. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you as well.
For now, I have a question, and we may have covered it. I just don't recall. with the return and the testing, are we testing for level of competence, or are we testing as a requirement of the district's rules and regulations?
It's a requirement. Oh, thank you, Danielle. I'll let you.
So can you repeat the question? It's what's the motivation or reason for remote testing? Is that right? Okay. Go ahead. You want to add anything?
I was going to say, one of the points you made in the plan is that they're coming back and they will be tested. And so I was trying to understand, what are they being tested for? For their level of competence, having, you know, gotten this distant learning to see where they are, or is it just time for the test in accordance with the rules that we're working under?
Okay, so they're not gonna be coming back to be tested. We're gonna be doing remote testing. So that means they'll be taking, the preponderance of students will be taking either the NWA or the SBAC via remote systems that are available. And we were considering having students do testing in person, but because of this slow and steady and gradual approach, it wasn't possible to ensure that kids came to campus first for other reasons than testing. And we were adamant that we didn't want to do that. And we also are consistent with like following the guidance from the CDE and the US Department of Ed that the first time students come on campus should not be for high stakes testing. That said, it is also a requirement. And if we didn't have to do it at this moment in this season, we might not. But what we're going to make the most of it and the best of it, and we're going to use the data that we learn about student progress to help us guide the plan for instruction next school year and also over the summer. And not just instruction, but programming and all the supports that we need to give kids. The good news is that the standardized testing that we have given so far is NWA at the middle school levels indicates that contrary to predictions about COVID learning slide or COVID learning loss, our students have either maintained or grown. So we haven't seen the type of learning loss that was anticipated even using these standardized metrics. Does that answer the question?
Yes, that's good news. Thank you.
So I had a question. So when we're bringing them back on, you said it was for social emotional sort of interaction. Like, what does that mean? I'm not really clear on that.
Do you want to start, Farnaz, and then I can pick up?
Well, we've been thinking about ways to create spaces that inspire and engage our staff and our students to get to know each other. So sort of coming up with camp-like activities and team-building activities on the front end that also intertwine learning and engagement. So that was something that Charity was advocating for at a recent cabinet meeting. We're thinking of ways that we can standardize lesson plans that multiple teachers can use that create both the welcoming environment that students can get excited to come back into and create space for learning. Danielle, if you want to add to that, I'll just share that as a parent of kids who went right back to school and jumped right into drilling and helping them catch up, and because there's learning loss, and my son would come home from school crying that I wish I could just stay in distance learning because this is no fun and I don't like school. We want to do something that's the counter to that. We want them to come back and enjoy being together and address the fact that we haven't been able to see them, understand their social emotional needs, understand how they're doing, and connect them to resources.
Sorry, hit the wrong button. I think the other piece, the first answer to that question is we're figuring that out, what exactly it looks like. So to be honest, that is the work that is happening right now. And in order to do it well, like Farnaz said, it's going to require collaboration. It's going to require creativity and a willingness to rethink what has become the routine of the past year. But I think the why is really important. It's like underlying this approach is that is one, just the circumstances of our community. and the reality of what this pandemic has meant for them and how it looks different because of the zip code that they live in. But also just even pre-pandemic and ECS alignment with our values and our mission is that we think the best learning happens when there is a meaningful human connection. And we thought that before the pandemic happened. When teachers and students know that their teachers care deeply about them and not just about their achievement, but their happiness, their well-being, their education, their future. We also know that when learning is celebrated within a community that feels genuine and true, it reinforces students' sense of self, their motivation, and their agency. So I think when Farnaz is describing this emphasis on social emotional, our theory, our bet is that when kids feel excited and happy and connected in ways that have been missing for the last year plus, that we think their academic success and achievement will improve. And put even more explicitly, we don't think it's possible we can move them forward academically without that. It's a necessary condition for learning that they feel loved and they feel happy and they feel connected and cared for. And it was feedback that our teachers and staff were really insistent that we take seriously too. It's been responsive to them, but also it's consistent with what we believe in. And in terms of what exactly it looks like, we're playing around with it. And the two kind of things that the leadership teams are thinking through right now is COVID-safe community builders. So the kind of community building that happened in a normal ECS classroom, how do you make an activity that doesn't require that doesn't require touching or that will be safe, COVID safe, I guess is the best way to put it. And then the other piece is you can't do like just community building for very long. It gets boring. Kids, if they just do community building all day, all of their whole visit week after week, they're not gonna actually wanna keep coming back. So we've gotta do more than just community building. But with our sixth graders and our ninth graders who've never interacted with each other in person, it might be more community building for longer. And then we're starting to think about ECS type ways of doing learning that centers that humanity, but also is connected to meaningful learning. For instance, many of our students are going to be eligible to get vaccinated soon. Let's make that part of the conversation. What is vaccination all about? What are the risks? What are the benefits? What are the conversations you're having at home with your family? What do you need to understand, like yourself as an advocate for your own health and for your families and for your communities? That's like an example of an interdisciplinary lesson that would involve community building and thinking about the interaction between learning and community. And also that would support their own reflection, metacognition, self-directed learning.
Just want to make sure that we're creating enough space. If anyone has critical questions, concerns about the path that we're taking, anything you guys want to share at this point. I know Kira's the best.
I want to ask about the seniors. We talked a lot about the sixth graders and ninth graders that will be interacting for the first time with our community. What is being done to adapt those seniors as they come back for a small period of time?
Great question. It's seniors and eighth graders. And they're kind of similar from talking to the principals in terms of needs and concerns. I haven't talked to Gardena today. This is reflective of two of the three campuses. The culminating students in eighth grade and 12th grade, what is looking like is they are going to be targeted for coming back to campus like last, phased in last. So for the seniors, and it's for the same reason, they're in a groove with distance learning. They have some culminating learning activities that need to happen. And then after those are complete, their teachers and they are going to be ready for the celebration of the end of a school, you know, phase. So for the seniors, they normally get like senior week. And so Casey is thinking about, and the 12th grade team is thinking about using time in May after APs and any of that kind of final stuff for like thinking about their on-campus experience, something like a senior week, a modified senior week, obviously. And the eighth graders at Inglewood or eighth grade team is thinking similarly, like first, let's get them through the culminating academic activities that they need to do, and then moving to think about the kind of culminating social activities that could happen at the end of the school year as part of their campus visits. Yes, exactly. So some of the same thing, but they're just being targeted differently. And the one other thing that I know about the seniors is that Casey talked about bringing kids in smaller groups for kind of specific reasons, like if a student needs help with if something can't be done online, like college enrollment and some of that end of year college stuff, she talked about bringing them in kind of like, I forget the term she used, but little kind of groups, almost kind of like the scheduled intervention groups for these kind of purposeful in-person interactions. That could happen not just in 12th grade, but she mentioned it in 12th grade. Cammie, did I forget anything?
No. She was saying that that for the seniors, it's things like, you know, processing that final financial aid package and certain things that are just hard to do on the internet, especially for some kids.
Quick question, and forgive me if I wasn't looking at the data correctly. On these surveys on students who plan to come back or not come back, were they broken down by grade? And do we have a sense if any one of those grades have either a very small number who expect to come back or potentially a large number? And how does that affect, if at all, the teaching when they're back at school itself?
We did analyze the data by grades, and we didn't show that to you. We just showed it by school. But the biggest differentiator on our data was that our high school seniors were the most eager to come back and had the highest percentage of students who were eager to come back face-to-face and see each other one last time. The rest of our student population seemed to be mostly aligned, if I remember correctly. But Cammie and Danielle, if you remember differently, chime in.
I think what's important to keep in mind is whatever the numbers were during that moment of survey, they're going to change. So we keep going back to this notion of how do we design a system that's ready to change? Because we fully expect that as students start to get back on campus, especially if they're coming back on campus to do things that are meaningful to them and exciting and stimulating and not, you know, cramming information to catch them up, they're going to tell their friends and other students are then going to start pressuring their parents. And so we're going to have increasing numbers, we expect, of students who want to come back. So whatever we build, it has to be flexible enough that it can expand at whatever pace it needs to expand, right, mm-hmm. over the next couple of months. So we keep encouraging principals to kind of start simply so that there's capacity for shifting and growing as the numbers change. And then the same thing is true about the pandemic, right? Like that might change too. And we're anticipating that it's going to keep trending in the direction it's trending, which will make it easier and safer for people to come back. Mm-hmm. Recommendations about physical distancing are probably going to change from the county. So everything, the numbers, both the number of kids and the numbers around the rules for being safe are going to keep changing. So we just have to be really nimble in order to respond to that.
And just a quick follow-up question regarding that. Given the expectation that seniors are coming back in a larger number, the teachers and the exemptions, is those five, I think there were five you mentioned, is that correct? Are they spread across all different grades, or are they, like, I'm just curious, are they all senior teachers, for example?
No, we looked for that. Yeah, we're hearing from HR that the requests for accommodations and exemptions are fairly evenly spread across campuses. They're proportionate. They're not clustered in any way that should make it extra hard logistically.
Okay, good. Thank you. I just think they're questioning.
I'm conscious of the fact that we have another big agenda item for us to review, which is the Environmental Charter High School Gardena site plan. But I did want to, you know, one thing that was important to several board members who brought it up was the need to approve this plan, as other boards have. So given the fact that you guys are fiscally responsible for us, that you hold ECS in your hand, we wanted to make sure that you had one last chance to ask any critical questions you have, but also feel comfortable with the path that we've chosen as a leadership team. If you don't feel comfortable, like, this would be the time. If not, we'll move to that other presentation. Thank you all so much for these thoughtful questions. We really appreciate it. And I think, Anthony, at this point, it's probably good to move to the ECHS Gardena facility update. You're on mute.
I don't know if you want to pull up the agenda just to make sure that we're... By the way, got my vaccine today.
Yay!
So I have short sleeves.
So as you can see, we spent less than 40 minutes on the path back to campus, and now we are on to the Gardena facility update.
Okay, I mean, easily transition to Allison to provide that update.
Allison, do you want to share your screen, or do you want me to? I have it.
I can share my screen. It's up.
Awesome.
So I have the pleasure of talking to you about our new high school campus for Gardena, which is very exciting. Part of the agenda today is I'm going to tell you a little story about this campus and how it fits into our big plan. We're going to look at the church that we are proposing to move into for our new high school. We'll also explore the partnership that we have with our special purpose entity called MCP, or Menlo Charter Properties, and our LLC, which is going to be called Manhattan Beach Boulevard LLC. We have done this kind of partnership before, and we're going to look at what it takes to make this partnership work and what's changed since the last time we've done something similar to this. We'll look at the particular project that we're working on with MCP and MBB. We'll explore the timeline a little bit, fundraising efforts, and then talk about next steps. And it sounds like a lot, but it will go faster than it looks. So this is the property. This is a property that the board has seen before. Way back when, a couple years ago, we tried to lease the site and were unsuccessful. We have now been able to enter into a purchase sale agreement for this property. It's not yet signed, but we are very close to signing it. And it's not just for this building, which we had started out looking at, but it's now for the entire site. So it's a way bigger campus. It's going to be 2 acres, and it's very exciting. There are 20 classrooms on this campus. This is an overview of it so you can see it. So there's this ed building that has 3 stories in it and 16 classrooms. There's this annex building over here that has 6 classrooms and is also 3 stories. And then there's this church area over here, which will be able to convert to a multi-purpose room. And then over here are offices. And then there's a courtyard in the back of it over here. Plus there's courtyard and play space here and over here. And then all of this is parking, which is significantly more parking than our current high school has. And this is what it looks like from the street view. It is gated, so it's in a neighborhood that's residential. It's across the street from Manhattan, from El Camino College. This is just the spaces so you can see what they look like and how well they're maintained. This is the office space that the church uses. This is part of that office space as well. This is the annex building, which has the 6 classrooms in it and some office spaces. This is the courtyard that they're fixing up and repairing right now. This is the ed building where there are 16 classrooms and offices. There's also a kitchen in the downstairs area for faculty. Here's more views of the classroom spaces. So it's exciting because it's actually large enough for all of our students that would enroll at this site. It's just larger than 2 acres. There's over 40,000 square feet of built space, which includes 24,000 in the ed building, which is here, 7,000 in this over here, 7,000 over here, and then another 10,000 over here. There's over 100 parking spaces. There's courtyards and basketball courts that are already there, could be home for our 500 plus students. It could also be, it's probably large enough to even house our home office space. It has an existing CUP for educational use. So it's move-in ready and student ready. And it has a certificate of occupancy for school. We've reimagined the space, which I think you all been part of some of the fundraising, growth, sustainability and growth, the committee for sustainability and growth meetings, where we shared our vision for what we can turn the space into over time. And so Gensler put together some views on that, just to how to reimagine the space and kind of turn it into an ECS feeling kind of campus. In order to make this space, I'll stop for a second. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. So in order to make this
I just wanted to take a moment to share how exciting this is for all of us, given the fact that the space that we were considering was barely going to fit 400 students. A lot of the classrooms were extremely narrow and had very poor lighting. And this model plan now provides so much space for creativity and excitement. We met with Gensler last week, Allison and I, and we threw out some ideas and then said, but we'd really love to see what creative ideas you guys can come up with for us to better utilize this space. So it's really exciting to think about it that way. The space for the church, the cathedral space, is stunning. It's this gorgeously well-lit open space. Right now, we don't have a space that can house all 180 of our staff. This would be a space where we could have a community-wide event. We could engage all of our parents from across sites. We could have all of our staff from across sites. Like, there's so much possibility. We thought about a basketball court. Realistically, that's not going to happen because of the space requirements, but there's a lot of other possibilities. And so I just wanted to say that this evolution, though extremely stressful in terms of price, is extremely exciting because before it was affordable, but it was kind of a sadder space And it was hard to envision it as an environmental charter school. And now it can really be such a beautiful campus and create so much opportunity for our students.
And I will say there were other challenges that have been removed because of this as well. So that's you may not know it, but it makes it much easier to move forward. I'll just say that.
A ton easier.
Yeah, there was something about splitting the lot between the entity and us, which could have taken a year and could have ended up with a negative result in the end. So we wouldn't have had a space at the end of a year. Like this provides a level of certainty, which is extremely exciting as well. Thanks, Allison, for pausing.
Thank you for sharing. I'm super stoked. I didn't think this was going to happen. When they turned around and said, how about you guys buy the whole site? I was like, really?
Can I share one more thing?
What?
When we walked into the pastor's office and Allison saw the pastor and said, hey, do you remember me? I met you 15 years ago when I came and saw this site originally for our first expansion. So the fact that there's so few spaces in Gardena that over 15 years, Allison has considered this space 5 times. Is just that this is the only space that's come up in the 3 years that I've been here. Just to help you understand like the scarcity. Thank you. Sorry.
No, it's perfect. Cause if you haven't been on that journey with us, you don't know all that. How does ECS like do this? How do we buy something that's so expensive and make it work for our community? And so the way charter schools do this, this is a little bit of background, but if you want to learn more, I can share this slide presentation. There's a whole explanation of how MCP works. So Menlo Charter Properties is a 501c3. Its sole purpose as a nonprofit is to own, construct, and finance school facilities for environmental charter schools. And that benefits environmental charter schools in 2 ways. One, it separates our schools and it separates ECS from the risks related from building ownership. The second way that it does, it helps us is it enables environmental charter schools to qualify for SB 740 funding from the state. So when we lease space from another entity and we don't own space as a school district, we're able to recoup those dollars from using this program, SB 740. And we're able to get up to $1,184 back per student for the space that we lease. And so by having these multiple entities serve as landlords to ECS, we're able to recoup a large portion of the rental costs. And it makes properties affordable for charter schools that would otherwise not be affordable. There's a lot more to that. And there's a lot of information that we put together here. And you'll be able to look at that after this, if you would like. And I can also hold a special meeting to explain that as well, if anybody's interested. I know a lot of people already know about it. In fact, 2 of our board members sit on the board of MCP, Anthony and Ken. And Janina's been coming as our facilities chair to all of those meetings as well. So she's more familiar with it. So we have done this before. That said, and you've seen these slides before because the other campuses have been built with this similar structure. So before ECMS was, before we took over ECMS, the school where the middle school is in Gardena, it was an abandoned church. It was boarded up. And there was graffiti and there were lots of pigeons that lived inside the buildings. And we were able to acquire the site and it was less than 1 acre. For $2 million. And then we had to spend about $9 million in tenant improvements. We worked to get New Market Tax Credit financing in order to and raise $1 million in order to get the building built and then to lease the building back to the middle school for a cost of about $1,100 per student, which at that point in time was expensive for a charter school, but it's no longer expensive for a charter school because things have changed a little bit, but I'll get there in a second. So this is what it looks like after. So we have experience turning spaces that looked one way into something that looks a little different. We opened up the buildings with garage doors so that the students had spaces that the classrooms spilled out onto. In Inglewood, we moved onto a campus with only 4 classrooms initially, and then we built a 10 classroom structure. That is done in partnership with a church, and the church is still active. And with that space, we rent the existing spaces for about $12,000 a month. We lease the land that we built the property on from the church, and then we built the property, which was about another $5 million. So altogether at the Inglewood site, we pay about $1,250 per student for the site. And both of our middle schools have 360 students, which is less than what our high school has. So this is sort of a summary of our current costs per student. And Farnaz, if you want to jump in and clarify anything, feel free. But here I kind of highlighted our cost per student that we're spending on facilities. And then I share how much money we get back from 740. And the number we get back from 740 went from $750 to now $1,184 over the last several years. So we're getting even more money back. So the actual cost that we're spending for the facility is over here. For the proposed site at ECHS Gardena, for the new high school, we're going to raise $4 million, which is a lot more, but you know what the aggressive fundraising campaign that Farnaz and Julia put together. The site's going to cost us about $2,100 per student. And we'll get back about $888 of that using SB 740 financing. And so ultimately the site will cost us about $1,200 per student. So more money, but the times are different. Since we've done this lap before, and I've said some of these things before, a lot has changed. SB 740 reimbursement has increased from $750 per student to $1,184 per student. There's been a decrease in supply of charter facilities. Historically, charters averaged about $1,200 to $1,500 per student for a site. And that has recently changed in the last 5 years to averaging around $1,800 to $2,100 per student for a school site. There's some resources in the appendix to this presentation that share with you how much other schools are spending on sites. So in this particular case, MCP and Manhattan Beach Boulevard is going to acquire the site for $17 million. We're going to use seller financing. So the seller is going to carry some of the debt and also bond financing to support the purchase price of this site. And between the bond financing and the seller carry, MCP will be able to lease the site to us for no more than $2,100 per student. And that also means that as we grow 120 students per year, we're only going to be charged $2,100 per student while we're smaller. And then that number will grow as we get larger. We do not need to make any renovations to the site when we first move in, although we have an aggressive fundraising campaign so that we're able to make some renovations. Our entire program for 500 plus students will fit on the site. There's a projected timeline for things to happen. The purchase sale agreement has to get signed. Then we enter into a 90-day due diligence period where we MCP hires different folks to evaluate where we're at and make sure that the site is okay. And there's no like foundation problems, et cetera. Should we move forward, then the existing tenant that is there at the site will move out and we will move into the site come July 1. And then in 90 days from that period of time, we will be able to close on the site with the financing. And in the in-between stage, the church is going to lease us the space. And so that's kind of how our timeline will look to moving into that space. Farnaz, do you want to share?
We've already talked about this with all of the board members at length. You've come to capital campaign conversations. Our goal is still to raise $5 million by the end of next summer to be able to cover the cost of all the renovations that it will need over time for us to really be able to turn this into an environmental charter school campus.
So the next steps are to finalize a PSA and complete the due diligence that I talked about. The LACO facility team needs to come out and inspect the site and make sure it's okay. ECS, our board, needs to approve the project agreement with MCP and Manhattan Beach LLC. And then ECS has to finalize the sublease with MCP and MBB LLC. I wanted to give you all some time to process this and review this PowerPoint as well as the agreement so that at the next meeting, we can approve it. So you don't feel rushed.
Can we ask questions?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's okay. Are you on a time?
Well, we're trying to get you all out of here in 1 hour, and we will have more time dedicated to a conversation around this, but we do have time for a few questions. Thank you.
Okay. All right. If you can, this is phenomenal. And thank you so much for explaining it so well. I wanted to ask a question around the timeline. If we went back to the other prior slide, you said in the interim, you'll be leasing. For how long will we be leasing?
So once we sign the PSA, there'll be 90 days of due diligence, and then we have 90 days for the bond deal to close. So okay. It just depends on when that time is, but my guess is it will close somewhere in the fall on the site.
Got it. So 6 months maximum.
That's my guess.
Got it. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
And the lease is for what amount of time? The actual amount for the leasing of the space.
Oh, so the lease would be for probably 30 years.
Okay.
30 plus years. Yes. Good question. Because in order for MCP to get financing, we need a long-term lease on it.
Does moving head office onto the premises change, I guess, the numbers or how much money we need to pay or, you know?
The cost of our office space is actually very not so significant right now because of SB 740. But, you know, it would be about $12,000 or $15,000 in savings annually over time. So that could be a benefit to us.
But you all are asking the right questions.
Okay, I want to invite you all to not hesitate to reach out to Allison with questions over the next few weeks. This is an ongoing conversation. We're going to bring it back to you soon. And with that, I'm going to share my screen and go back to the agenda for us to get everyone out on time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Allison. Sorry, you're seeing my inbox. There we go.
Do you want me to lead the voting?
Yes, Anthony.
Okay, so we have a consent item to approve as a board for the 600,000 line of credit term sheet with the Beneficial State Bank. So first we'll have a motion and then I'll open it up to any questions, concerns, comments regarding the consent item. Do I have a motion to approve the $600,000 line of credit?
Motion to approve the $600,000 line of credit.
That's Kennedy. Do I have a second?
This is Janina. I second the motion to approve this line of credit.
Great. Thank you, Janina. Any questions, comments, feedback for Naz, if you wanted to provide any insight into that?
Just that we've maintained the line of credit in the past in case we needed revenue for anything and have not used it for many, many years. Allison can attest to that. This is a low interest rate line of credit. We won't need to pay anything on it if we don't touch it. It's highly probable that we won't utilize it in the near future, but it was a backup resource opportunity that was available to us that we found. Given the fact that we're going through so many change management efforts, it was wise to have in place.
And a quick question. And since we have not used it, is that amount a reasonable amount, or is it too high, or it's a reasonable amount to maintain?
The amount that we had was less than this, and that was the impetus for us to increase the amount. I want to reinforce we're unlikely to utilize it, but it does help if there are gaps in revenue or if there are deferrals that come in the year to come. It could be a helpful resource for us as a school. We're not forecasting the utilization of it at this time.
Any other questions, comments, feedback before we move to a vote? Okay. Huey.
Aye.
Madhu. On mute, maybe?
Aye.
Thank you. Zena.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Janice.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
And Anthony, the vote to approve is, we have approved the $600,000 in line of credit. And then we're moving on to action items.
And Allison has recommended that we remove action items A and B until later time, so the board members will have more time to ask questions and familiarize themselves. Allison, anything you want to say on these?
No, I wanted to give them a chance to see them, and I will, if they're not linked there, we'll make sure that they're linked. Jeremiah, are they linked?
Yes.
The project agreement is, the lease, we don't have it yet.
Okay. Is the PowerPoint linked too?
It's not linked, but yeah, we could share it out after the meeting.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Allison and Jeremiah. With that, we'll move on to action item C, or action letter C. And so do I have a motion to approve spring 2021 reopening plan?
Anthony, this is Huey, and I move that we approve the spring 2021 reopening plan.
Thank you, Huey. Do I have a second?
A second. This is Madhu.
Madhu, thank you, Madhu. Any questions, comments, or concerns before we move to vote? Okay, with that, Huey?
Aye.
Madhu?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Travis?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
And Kennedy?
Aye.
Anthony is aye. So we have approved the spring 2021 reopening plan. I'll send it back to Farnaz to discuss any upcoming dates or announcements.
Thank you all so much. Thank you for being available with limited time and planning for these special meetings. We have another special meeting on May 3rd that we're looking forward to doing my evaluation. And then also we're gonna have a quick introduction to the LCAP plan. And we're gonna show you a comp analysis for several of our leadership roles that need to be increased over the coming year. On top of that, we're going to be having our May 25th board meeting, which was previously scheduled, and that's going to be our big LCAP meeting and our big budget meeting. And we will also be identifying our priorities for the 21-22 school year and talking to you about that in that meeting.
So we're extremely grateful for you all for being available, for your thoughtful questions. And also, I would love it if you could reach out to me if you're interested in serving on the committee to review the exceptions and accommodations. I would love to have 3 or 5 board members to serve on it. We need an odd number so we can have an easy voting process. And if nobody reaches out to me after this meeting, I will be annoying and reach out to you guys and try to recruit 3 people. But it should
As an odd person, I will offer my services.
Thank you so much.
I would too. This is Huey. I would love to do that.
Thank you so much. So everybody else, you're on the spot. Think about it. Reach out to me. We'd love your participation. And then with that, thank you all so much for your ongoing support. I feel like there's never an issue that I can't go to any of you with. Travis, I have to tell you that I'm tremendously grateful for Betsy's guidance and support and partnership. So just thank you guys so much for your partnership and ongoing support. That's it in terms of my upcoming announcements.
All right, any further appreciations before we move to adjourn?
No, I'll just say, I'll make sure I'll pass that on to Betsy. She'll be glad to hear that. She thought your evaluation was today, so she was gonna come, but I'm sure she'll be at the next one with your evaluation.
Yeah, she's planning for it, thank you.
I'll just give one appreciation, and it was somewhat discussed earlier, but I appreciate Allison and all the work that she's putting in to get this high school across the finish line. It's huge, it's exciting, it's a lot of work, and I just want to appreciate her for what she's been doing.
Absolutely, and for so clearly and succinctly explaining what's going on, I appreciate that too.
I'm glad it made sense.
Allison, I just want to say thank you for just being tenacious. Sorry about my dogs, but you've been tenacious in this process. And I've been by your side, I recall, 3 years ago. So thank you.
Been a long journey.
All right, with that.
I have one more. I'm so sorry. I want to thank all the board members who reached out with questions and pushed us to create an additional space for us to continue this conversation today. We have advocated for you guys to be our parent advocates on this board, and the follow-up conversations have been great. I also want to appreciate Ken in his absence for his critical questions and thoughtful feedback. You guys can only make us stronger by asking us the hard questions, so thank you.
Okay. You have a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Zena, motion to adjourn the meeting.
Thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
I second.
And that would be?
Madhu.
Madhu. Thank you, Madhu. I was looking down. All right, Huey.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Hi.
Denise.
Hi.
Kennedy.
Hi.
Anthony. Hi. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your participation. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Good to see you all.
Happy Friday.